then who better to tell us how to care for our car than the car doctor? John Paul from AAA Northeast is here in studio. John, I think for the first time in 2021, you're in person here. Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it's the first time I put a sport coat on in 2021.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. We appreciate that. Yeah. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for inviting me. Yeah, it's October, and it's a good time to think about getting your car ready for winter time. I'm not good at predicting much of anything, but it's going to get colder eventually. It's probably going to snow, and your car is going to suffer because of it. And it's a good time to think about it. It's interesting too. A lot of people think about batteries failing in the winter, and they do. But all the damage happens during the summer. The summer heat is what really affects a battery.
We had plenty of summer
heat
this year.
We did. And it was. It's interesting. The average life of a battery in the Northeast is a little bit under 5 years. In hot weather states like the middle of Florida or Arizona, they're closer to two, maybe three years. Yeah,
okay.
Because it's that summer heat that does the battery in.
Is there something you can do to check? Other than having a test?
Having a test is the best thing.
Okay.
But if you don't remember the last time you had your battery tested, or maybe you have an older car and you don't remember the last time you had your battery replaced, it's probably time for a new one.
Okay.
Yeah, because what happens is when the temperature gets down to about freezing, it takes about, your battery loses probably 30% of its capacity. Just like if you've ever left your cell phone in the car overnight and come out and it was charged when you came out, but it wasn't afterwards. It's like the cold weather affects it.
Okay.
And when the temperature gets to zero, your battery needs about 50% more capacity to get the engine cranked over.
So,
So if you're going into winter with a battery that's about half the power it should be, and we get a couple of 0 degree days or 10 degree days, your car is probably not going to start.
Right.
And the other thing we like to tell people too is if your car started with a jump start, you really only fixed the symptom, which was it didn't start, but you didn't fix the problem. The problem is you probably need a battery.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's, thinking of those things for wintertime, the vital fluids, oil, engine coolant, those are really important. Engine oil adds to about 25% of the engine cooling, but as the oil gets contaminated, it's harder for it to flow when the temperature is cold, so it makes the car just harder to start. And antifreeze engine coolant is important because it helps prevent the car from overheating in the summer, but also helps prevent it from freezing in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And we'd like to think, if you looked at a jug of antifreeze, it would say permanent antifreeze. Well, it isn't permanent.
See, I was going to ask you about that, because especially the newer cars, you don't ever touch the antifreeze anymore.
Not as much as you used to. And this goes back to way before me, when to prevent an engine from freezing, you actually poured alcohol in the radiator.
Really?
And the alcohol would keep the water from freezing.
Yeah.
But what would happen is the alcohol would evaporate. As it got hot, it would evaporate. So you had to constantly be adding alcohol to the radiator. Then they came out with ethylene glycol antifreeze, the stuff that kind of what we use today. And typically that would last 2 or 3 years, but now with a lot of the proprietary mixes, 5 years, 6, 7, 8, sometimes 10 years in some cases.
Yeah.
But you still need to check it, because it still can get acidic. And even though it prevents the engine from freezing, it can sort of eat away at the inside of the engine and damage things like cylinder head gaskets and things like
that.
That
sounds expensive.
That's very expensive.
Okay.
So even though you don't want to do any maintenance, and realistically, cars are so much more dependable today than they used to be. You look at a car today, you barely have to do anything to it for 100,000 miles.
Right,
change the oil, check the fluids.
Yep.
But because they are so good, people don't open the hood. It used to be when I was a kid, it was sort of like your first car, your first $50 car, you were under the hood all the time, because there was always something leaking or broken or something.
Yes.
Today, you don't have to do a whole lot, but engines still burn oil. Antifreeze still needs to be added to. Transmission fluid, maybe you have a little bit of a leak that needs to be attended to. So there's still things you need to do. Fan belts and radiator hoses, we used to do them all at 2 or 3 years. Now they last 10 years, if longer. But the average car on the road today is 12 years old. So if you're one of the average, you could be driving a car that's getting ready to literally fall apart.
Okay, there's something positive to look at. Yeah.
But on the other hand, if the car's in good shape, spending $1,000 on maintenance that you can drive it for another few years is money well spent, you know, for the equivalent of a couple of car payments.
Heard reports about so many more people holding onto their cars because it's so hard to find new ones now, and they're so expensive going above, you know, manufacturers' retail prices, that it's bogging down repair shops.
It is. Yeah. I mean, the good thing is repair shops are sort of keeping up, because if they weren't, we'd be seeing a lot more cars broken down by the side of the road.
Right.
So, but yeah, it's not unusual to go into a repair shop now where maybe they'd say, I'll bring it in tomorrow, Joe. We can look at it. Now it's like bringing it in next week because we're that busy. And just like everybody else, repair shops are shorthanded too.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So so people are keeping their cars longer. No one really expected it when COVID hit, you know, 18, 19 months ago. A lot of people who maybe had one car and took public transportation all of a sudden wanted to get a second car.
Right.
People weren't trading their cars in. A lot of lease cars people decided to hold on to. So those cars didn't end up in the used car market. With the semiconductor shortage, the chip shortage, that has really affected some dealer inventory. So they haven't had the cars to sell. And some popular cars like the Hyundai Palisade, their sort of midsize SUV, is selling for $10,000 over sticker price.
That's incredible.
Yeah. You know, where before, if you told somebody, you know, if you walked in and you said, I'll buy it out, the sticker price on the window, I'll buy that, you know, people would say you were crazy. Now people are paying way over because there's just not the inventory around. The good news is used car prices have come down a bit, but not much.
Okay.
Back in the summer, used car prices were about 30% higher this summer than they were last summer.
Is that right?
They've come down a little. They're like 25% higher, but they're still high. And I still hear stories of people that, you know, bought a car for $32,000, drove it for 5 years, traded it in,
and got
$32,000, and the dealer put it on the lot for $35,000 and sold it.
Incredible.
So so there's still a big demand. And like I said, a lot of people took public transportation. People from the big cities like New York that decided to move to their maybe summer homes because they didn't want to be in the city, all of a sudden decided they needed another car or two.
So that created it. Yeah.
And the rental cars, with everybody not traveling at the beginning of the pandemic, the rental car companies sold their fleets off, which was good for a short period of time. All of a sudden, there was an excess amount of used cars, but then there wasn't because they didn't buy cars. And now, where some of those, you know, Hertz or Avis would go in and say to General Motors and say, "I'll buy 5 days worth of production for our fleet," they don't have that ability right now, which is why, you know, in some, and I don't think it happens often, but in some places, people are renting U-Haul trucks rather than rental cars because that's the only thing that's available.
The only thing they
can get. Yeah.
To go to the supermarket and you're pulling in in a van or cargo van or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there was a story, I guess, it made all the social media stuff. You know, somebody went to Hawaii, went to go rent a car. They couldn't get one, so they spent their week in Hawaii in a box truck, a U-Haul box truck, driving around because at least it was available and it was cheaper.
Yeah.
And rental car, I looked at rental car prices in New York this week. They're averaging $300 a day.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so stay in a hotel. Yeah, exactly. Stay home. Yeah.
Stay
home.
Has AAA looked at all at traffic patterns recently, because they seem to be all out of sorts?
They are. Okay. I mean, we kind of, just like everybody else, we talk to the people that watch traffic as well, and we've found that the normal rush hour commute is all crazy.
Yeah.
And but there's traffic, it seems like, all day long now.
Correct.
So
yeah,
it is. It's amazing. And even the scary thing was, back a year or so ago, when there was a lot less people on the road, there was actually more fatalities.
Yes.
So people were driving. Yeah, people were driving faster.
Right.
They weren't paying attention. Now I happened to turn on the traffic the other morning, and it was, I think there was a, you know, 10-mile backup going into Boston at 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's that same backup at 2 in the afternoon where you wouldn't expect it, because people are out, and where they would normally be kind of locked in their office, they have some flexibility now. So I think that's part of it as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I don't think people have slowed down even as volume has increased.
No.
You know, they got used to those higher beads.
They have.
When folks were on the road, and and that's causing a lot of problems.
It is. Yeah. It is. And so people really need to be careful. And you know, we live in a state that you're not supposed to keep a cell phone in your hand. But
right.
You know, driving here today, if I was a police officer, I probably could have given out 500 tickets. You know, I saw an awful lot of cell phone use. So people need to put their phones down, and just holding their phone in their hand and talking to it is still, that's still
it's
against the law.
It's not hands-free.
Yeah, it's not hands-free.
Right.
So, so put your phone down. And even when you're hands-free, your mind is busy. So, you know, save the idle chit-chat for when you're sitting someplace, mm-hmm. not while you're driving. When you're driving, it should be, you know, two eyes on the road, hands on the wheel, you know, mind on the traffic in front of you.
Yeah.
That's what you should be thinking about.
Did you have to take out a loan to pay for the gas to get here today, John? We cannot not talk about the cost of gasoline.
It is. It's funny. I haven't been driving as much. I've been working at home for the past 18 months.
Wow.
And I filled up both our family cars about a week ago and went, holy cow, when did gas go up? And I talk about gas every week, but I guess it didn't impact me. And when I filled up, I'm like, wow, gas went up. And it really has to do with supply and demand, because demand is strong right now. Demand came up. The manufacturers haven't stepped up quite enough, although they're working on that. But the big thing is OPEC, or OPEC Plus, that they're calling it now, hasn't stepped up their production. And because of that, the market has reflected in higher prices. Whether the reality is, is there enough oil to make gasoline available on the market? Maybe. But what really happens is it's sort of the thought of, well, there's not going to ramp up, so we better buy what we can. And when there's a panic buy to buy crude oil and gasoline, it drives the price up.
Yeah.
So you know, I looked this morning, the average crude oil price is in the mid 80s right now.
Yeah.
There's talk, Citibank says we might see $100 barrel oil by the end of the year. It looks like, though, after the first year, there may be a big change in that. There's some changes there. So it'll be interesting to see. But you know, you're paying, you know, even if you just looked at a year ago, you're paying about a dollar more per gallon.
Yep.
And, you know, if your average fill up is 15 gallons, $15 more a week, which most people fill up once a week or so.
Right.
So you think about that over, you know, $60 a month over the course of a year, you know, you're going to be paying another $700 a year for gasoline.
Significant, yeah.
And that could be enough between, you know, either doing something fun or putting food on your table,
right,
depending on what it is. Yeah.
And it's going to translate into heating your home, too, this winter,
especially
here in the
North. Yeah, heating oil is in the same predicament. And I'm looking at my oil tank at a quarter of a tank and go, should I fill up yet? Should I wait? And I'm going to wait a little bit. I'm going to see what happens.
Yeah, and natural gas as well.
Yeah, natural gas, I'm sure, as well, even though it all comes from here.
Right.
But as we switch over, as more people switch from oil to natural gas, and we're starting to see more renewables, we're seeing more photovoltaics on people's homes and things like that. But it's probably going to be an expensive energy season coming up for the next 6 months or so.
Yeah, I remember it was, I think, 2008. We had $4 a gallon gasoline.
We did, yeah. and right after the big hurricane that hit New Orleans, that caused some real supply issues. And it's interesting, even whatever the hurricane was that was in Texas, there was a lot of thought about people hoarding gasoline, and not even really hoarding. The average person drives around with between a quarter and a half a tank of gas. And all of a sudden, if they hear there's going to be a gas shortage issue, they go and fill up.
Right.
Well, the gas stations aren't set for that. So they're used to you driving around with a half a tank of gas and filling up when it gets near empty.
Right.
But if everybody fills up all at once, there's going to be a gas shortage. So, and in Southwest Florida, for instance, they were absolutely not affected by the pipeline issues in Texas, but yet there was gas shortages because people panic bought.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's kind of crazy how it all works, but it settles out over time. But if you hear about a shortage, don't immediately run out and fill up, because you'll be part of the problem. And the other issue is, I went to a gas station a couple weeks ago, and they had closed early that night. And the next morning, I said, "Hey, you guys closed last night." And they're like, "Yeah, we couldn't get it. We were short of truck drivers." Oh. We had gasoline. Yep. We just couldn't get it from the terminal to here.
Well, that's a major problem, obviously, in some of the ports as well, getting some of those cargo containers off of ships.
I think I have a refrigerator and a cargo container somewhere.
Probably everybody has something waiting offshore somewhere. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So we're in a really interesting time right now with all these sort of supply and demand issues, and you know, we're going to be paying more for gasoline. There's no question about it.
Well, it seems like everything operates in such a thin margin.
Right.
There's no surplus backup.
Right. And that's by design. You know, it's just-in-time delivery.
Right.
You know, so the idea of having 1,000 widgets in a warehouse hoping that somebody's going to buy you 1,000 widgets is money poorly spent. To have 10 widgets in a warehouse that you're going to deliver 9 of them tomorrow is... makes more
sense.
Which
is great when everything
is trackable and you know what to do.
Right.
And that's sort of the issue with gasoline as well. So, you know, when we had the Colonial Pipeline hack where that shut that down, that caused some problems. And that might have been the problem in Southwest Florida, the Colonial Pipeline. And it didn't affect Florida, but people panicked and that happened.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean,
the emotional response is what gets you.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
Which is why I guess we ran out of toilet paper and things at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yes. Yeah. Let's hope that doesn't happen again. Can we talk a little bit about, I know AAA is involved in a study of safety devices and new vehicles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting results.
Yeah, Advanced Driver Assistance Systems is kind of what it's called, ADAS. And these are systems that maybe automatically apply the brakes if you don't, or warn you to apply the brakes if you don't, or if you drift out of the lane, beep, or actually kind of tug the car back into the lane, or actually warn you maybe if you're not paying attention. It might say, oh, it's time for a cup of coffee and, you know, take a nap. But what we've found is the systems work fairly well on a good day. But during inclement weather, when you really want them to work,
when
it'd be like saying, oh, your windshield wipers work great when the sun's out, but during the rain, they don't work very good, but that's when you want windshield wipers to work.
Right.
And that's when you want the advanced driver assistance systems to work. And we found there's a certain amount of degradation when a lot of the systems use cameras mounted up behind the rearview mirror, aiming out the front windshield. Well, when the windshield gets covered with dirt, dust, mud, bugs, whatever the case is, rain, snow.
Yeah.
The systems start to degrade and at some point will actually even shut off.
Mm.
Well, if I'm driving in a horrible rainstorm and I can't see very well, that's when I want my car to be able to see well.
Right.
And what we try to tell people is these systems are an assistant to you. They don't take over for you. That hasn't happened yet. We haven't, got to the Jetson stage yet.
It's being experimented, though.
Yeah, it's being experimented.
Yeah.
But the systems rely on radar, LiDAR, camera systems, and those systems can struggle in poor weather.
Mm.
So the idea that all of these systems together are designed to work with you, the driver. So think of it as a team. They're your teammate in safe driving.
But you're the captain.
But you're the captain.
Okay.
And there may be times that you don't captain that well and maybe, you know, your car can help you.
Right.
But most of the time, you're going to be the one who's in charge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is manufacturers taking note of that study?
They are.
Okay.
In fact, it is getting better. It is getting better.
Because these systems are not cheap.
They're not cheap.
No.
And a lot of car companies are putting them in as factory equipment now. So, you know, if you go out and buy a Toyota or a Subaru or something that has their forward collision avoidance system in it, they will, you know, they'll come as standard equipment.
Mm-hmm.
But people need to realize that, you know, maybe the big print says, you know, this will help you in the event of a crash. The little print says, you know, if everything works the way it's supposed to. So,
yes.
Yeah. So it is interesting. And forward collision avoidance, there was talk about having a mandated law that says all manufacturers will have to put this in their cars by 2022 or 2023.
Okay.
And instead, all the manufacturers kind of got together and said, we think it's a good idea too. We'll work. We'll do that. So
okay.
We are going to see more of it. I'm involved with an engineering group at AAA, and they did some really interesting tests out in California at a racetrack where they had sort of a big fake car. It looked like kind of like a Toyota Prius.
Okay.
And it was made out of foam and plastic. and it could go about 40 miles an hour. It was remote control. So we would have a car running right behind it, and then would have the remote control car come to a quick stop. They got really good at putting the car back together.
I bet.
Yeah, yeah, because it got run over a bunch of times. And the same thing, some of the other systems, pedestrian detection, works pretty well. Not so good at night in a curve in the road. So you still do need to pay attention.
Okay.
It's important.
Yeah, the smartest piece of equipment is the driver.
Exactly, exactly. Or at least we hope that.
Exactly, yeah. AAA.com.
AAA.com. If people want to send me a message,
yep.
AAA.com/car doctor. There's a little point there.
Okay.
And one other thing, this is a good time to remind people, slow down, move over. If you see people working by the side of the road, whether it's police, fire, emergency, construction, it's your job, it's your obligation as a driver to slow down or change lanes, let them do their job, and let them do their job safely. Unfortunately, too many safety workers get hit by the side of the road.
It's so true. Some of them AAA employees, I bet. Yeah,
exactly.
It's unfortunate. It's been a law now since 2009, which I didn't realize.
Yeah, it's been a law for a long while, but still people kind of forget about it. Everybody's kind of focused on their own thing. But when you see, you know, I like to say, if you see red, blue, yellow lights by the side of the road, slow down or move over.
Yeah.
Or both.
Great to see you, John.
Great to see you too, Joe. Thanks.
You're welcome. We'll have you back.
Thank you.